Okay, get my nubby and then we'll start. We're going to focus, we're going to skip Perek Bet. Perek Bet deals with essentially who Shlomo killed when he first got into power. So that was Adoniyahu for very good reasons, Yoav for even better reasons. Shimi ben Gera lost it, and all of them are excellent stories, and each one could be a shiur in and of itself. We're going to discuss Shimi a little bit, but really I want to move on to Chochmat Shlomo, and the topic of this year will be Chochmat Shlomo, Shlomo's wisdom, which he's famous for. And hopefully, as usual, things are not quite what they seem. So hopefully we'll uncover a few things, some of which are positive and some of which are negative. It's Perek Gimel, really, starts the whole issue of the Chochmat Shlomo, which is Perek Bet, Perek Gimel Pasuk Aleph and Shmuel Melachim Aleph. I'm going to skip over to the exact part where he's blessed with Chochma, which is Pasuk Hey. I'm going to read it in Hebrew and then translate as I go along. I'm skipping stuff on purpose because, as we'll see, it seems like you could skip this stuff because it's an independent area. Nonetheless, as usual, it would be unwise to do so. And we'll see how seemingly unrelated material of his marriage to Bat Paro and of his the fact that they were had not yet established the Beit HaMikdash do not seem directly related to what's going on, the dream that he has. Nonetheless, of course, it is quite related. Although why it's related, first we need to analyze the piece itself, and then we'll backtrack a little. So, Begivon, in Givon, which is a city, which we'll discuss exactly the location of later, but I can tell you it's in Shevet Binyamin. It's about three clicks northwest of Yerushalayim. Begivon nira Adonai el Shlomo b'chalom halayla v'yomer Elohim sha'al ma ten lach. God appears to him in a dream at night and says to Shlomo, ask, and I will give you what you request. You did a great, blessed, nice thing for my father. Because, of course, he went before you, be'emet, with tzedakah, with truth, and with tzedakah would be charity, right? Ubi yishrat levav imach, and he always was with a straight heart. You return the favor. You've given him a descendant, me. V'ata Adonai Elohai ata himlachta et avdecha tachad ad David avdi v'anochi nar katon lo edat seit vavo. I'm not going to translate that exactly because the words are important. I'll just loosely translate. Now, essentially, I'm a young kid. I mean, no, nar katon. A simple translation would be, I'm a young boy. V'lo edat seit vavo. I have no idea what, I don't know what's coming or going. V'avdecha betoch amcha asher bacharta amrav. And your servant, me, Shlomo, is amongst this great nation, asher lo yimanel v'lo yisaper merov, which cannot be counted. They are so many now. V'natata l'avdecha lev shomea l'shpot. And I wish you to give to me a heart to listen to justice, et amcha, of your people, l'havin ben tov l'ra, understand between good and bad, ki mi yucha l'shpot et amcha k'ved ezek, because who could possibly serve justice to these people? God was happy that he asked for this kind of wisdom. Because you asked me for this good thing, you didn't ask me to live a long life, and you didn't ask me for wealth, and you didn't ask me for your enemy's death. But you asked me to listen to justice. Hine asiti kidvarecha, I will do what you say, and I'll give you all these things. Hine anochi natatecha lev chacham v'navon, which is something we're going to analyze, a heart of wisdom and understanding. Asher kamocha lo haya lefanecha v'acharecha lo yakum kamocha. Nobody before was like you, nobody after ever will be. V'gam asher lo sha'alta natatecha, and all the things which you asked for, I will also give to you. So that's really where it sums up the basic idea. He's given a blessing of Chochma. And afterwards we see the first case, actually. It's the case of the woman with the two women claiming for the baby, where Shlomo demonstrates his great wisdom and intelligence, and everything seems to come to fruition. However, if we analyze this parsha, there are all kinds of fundamental problems about this dream. The first one is, he's asking for Chochma, right? He's asking, give me Chochma, because without Chochma, I can't judge the people. If I have no intelligence, it seems to say, how could I possibly be a good king? Because we've discussed in previous year, if you've been with me, the job of the king is to do two things, tzedakah and mishpat, or mishpat and tzedakah. famous case, I know I've gone over it before, but there are those who are new here. What is it? We even say it in Shmona Esrei. Notein Tzedaka Mishpat. We say it as one of the tefillah in Shmona Esrei. Mishpat, the Gemara says, what did David do? If the person who was rich was correct in justice, and the person who was poor was wrong, that is, the poor person did something to the rich person and had to pay the rich person, so David would do Mishpat, which means the poor person, poor Joe, has to pay rich Sammy. And then David would take the, what was the tzedakah? David would take money out of his pocket and give it to the poor person. Here's a gift for the poor person. Understanding both the requirement to fulfill law as God commanded, but also to understand that he's got a bunch of people that he has to go beyond the letter of the law. That's your classic mishpat and tzedakah. So without this, since that's the major role of the king, without this, Shlomo does not feel he could function in the, given this situation. And that's what he's asking for. But there's a problem. If you go back to Malachim Aleph Perek Bet, which is on the first page, this is the, what we skipped. And the, it opens up with David giving a Musar to Shlomo and saying, listen, you better take care of the following people. First of all, you better listen to Mitzvot and Torah all your life. Also, on that note, let's go through exactly what the halacha would be for these various people, and you need to take care of them in the right way. Now again, whether he was supposed to kill them or not kill them, different shir altogether, which we're skipping. Nonetheless, he was supposed to issue a certain commands. But listen to the words of David, what David says. Vayikrivu yimei David lamud, vayitzav shlomo b'nei lamor, anochi olech b'derech al aretz, I'm about to die, v'chazakta vayishesh, be a man, be strong. Va'asita kechochmatecha, and do what is in your wisdom. And then he talks about taking care of Yoav. And then afterwards, when he's talking about Shimi, he says, Va'ata altanakehu, don't allow him to be clean. Don't forgive him of his sins. Ki'ish chachamata, because you are what? You're a wise man. So it's repeated twice that Shlomo is definitely not he's a sharp tool in the draw. There's not a problem there. David even expresses the idea that Shlomo is working with a full deck. So if that's true, what exactly is Shlomo asking for?
More of the same.
Super chachma. He wants to be not just ish chachma, he wants to be super chachma. Okay, it's a possible answer, but it's a little bit, it's, you know, if he's a chacham, if he knows how to deal with these things, and it was very risky dealing with Shimi, and very risky dealing with Yoav, who was the general of the armies, if he's chacham enough to do it, and he was, why can he be shofet ha'am? David was able to be shofet ha'am. We'll see that David was said vayas David tzedaka u'mishpat chol ha'am, and David wasn't a superpower genius. He clearly was an intelligent guy and creative, wrote Mizmor to Tehillim. But why does Shlomo feel he has to do super chacham? It's a possible answer, by the way. I'm not saying that it's not right, but I'm saying it tickles. It should give you a tickler that something is not quite as it seems. Yes.
Maybe David doesn't think he's that smart. David is trying to give him some chizuk. You know, he's saying, look, you're a smart guy. You could be so smart. Why do you even have to tell him what to do?
This is you're absolutely right. A possible answer is there's a difference between knowing what you're supposed to do and actually acting out as a king. Also, and again, I'm not saying that this is wrong. You may very well be right, that it was sort of, he wasn't as smart as he seemed, and David was trying to give him chizuk. Before he asked for the chizuk, which is in Perek Gimel, he takes care of Shimi, and he takes care of Yoav, and he takes care of Barzilai Giladi for positive, and he takes care of Adoniyahu. When Adoniyahu says, listen, I just want the Pilegesh, that's all I want, just a babe. And his mother, Bathsheba, who's probably not stupid at all, just thinks that Adoniyahu is after a babe. Shlomo fully understands that when a man takes the pilegus of a king, the man is declaring his kingship. If you don't believe it, look at what Reuben did. And that's the trick, by the way. I won't go into it now. That's what Reuben was doing with Bilhah. Reuben had been excluded from being the firstborn. It was given to Yosef. And therefore, he was attempting to grab the Melucha back with Pelegesh. And another case like that is when Avshalom, remember Avshalom comes into the town and he kicks out David. So Achitophel says, the first thing you have to do is do what? Sleep with the Pelegeshim in front of everybody, because that's the way you establish Melucha. So Shlomo seems to be pretty smart. It's true. It's possible that he still felt that he needed more. All this is true. But there's something else which doesn't quite fit. Oh, very good. Also, the question is, whenever you think about how old Shlomo is, we always wonder how old he is. We get a feeling of like a 13-year-old kid. We're going to find out that's not true. We're going to find out that when his son is born, it turns out that he is 21. Shlomo must be 21 years old. We could deduce that from Rehoboam's age. So he's not all that young. He's certainly older than Shlomo, than David was. Well, maybe not David when he became king, but David when he was started on the run. It's possible, or maybe a sense that he's not quite as smart as he is, or maybe Nar Katon means something else, and that's maybe, and possibly we'll get to that.
Maybe that's the reason why he's asking the king, because he's young, which he has not thought about.
Right.
And he needs that to
It's possible. However, again, I'm not saying that that's not right. I'm just saying that one got the feeling that A is not so young. He's 21 years old. And B, he seemed to do very well in Perek Bet against all kinds of nasty people. And he seemed to handle it well. So I'm wondering if there's something else besides pure chachma. Now, we could say that David was just trying to give him chizuk. But if we take David as his words, ata ish chacham, if we take it as his words, then we got a little problem. What is the chachma? And why do I need extra chachma to be shofet ha'am? Yes?
You're asking for lev shomea. Is that equivalent to chachma?
Oh, that's also a question. Good. Why he asked for a lev shomea lishbot, and Hashem translates that as chachma. So why the translation? Very good. We'll get to that in a second. Yes? What's that? Right. It could be. It could be. Right. However, let's look at the request. Let's analyze the request again. The first thing that you notice is he doesn't ask for chachma. He asked for lev lishpot. Now let's go back to that pasuk in Gimel and let's see something else that I sort of skipped over. It's Perek Gimel pasuk Zion. Va'ata Adonai Elohai ata imlachta et avdecha tachat David avdi vanochi nar katon lo edat seit vavo. Now, what is seit vavo? In what framework? What does it mean to go and come? What? Not exactly. If you're curious to see, take a look at Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Chetz, which is the second item on the list. Vayar Shaul Mifley David. This is after David succeeded against Goliath and others. And Shaul was afraid of David. Ki haya Adonai imo meim Saul Shar, because he saw that in fact God was now with David, not with him. Vayasireu Shaul meimo, and Shaul took away from him. Vayasimeu lo Sar Elif, he made him a general. Vayetze David, vayetze vayavo lifnei ha'am. Ki teitze la milchama, ki tavo mi milchama. Vatseit v'lavo only has one connotation. Whenever you see vatseit v'lavo, it only has one connotation in Tanakh, and that is military. So all of a sudden, we thought Shlomo was talking about chachma l'shpot ha'am, and yet when we read this carefully, he wants to know how to fight wars. But I have a question for you. David took care of what? The whole role of David's life was to do what? Was to unify and to take care of all enemies all around. So there are no wars. In fact, we go through Shlomo's life, and some wars are actually hinted at, but no war is actually declared the entirety of Shlomo's life. So why is Shlomo all of a sudden worried that he can't be a general? Shlomo can't be a general. He's 21 years old, and he's worried. We thought he's worried about Chachman, yet the word Seit Vavo does not seem to indicate that. So again, what is he asking for? What is he saying? There's one other problem that I have here, which is in the very first pasuk. Begivo nira Hashem elav b'Shlomo b'chalom laila v'yomer Elohim sha'al ma'atein lach. Ask and I will give you what you ask for. There's a problem with that pasuk. God appears to him and says, ask and I will give you what I ask for. Generally speaking, that's not the way it works with God. How does it usually work with God? What's that? What? He knows what you're going to ask. It's possible, but something even before that. Usually, one asks. That's right. By Yaakov, by all the Avot. It was, ask God, and God responds with this or no. The word sha'alecha, but wait a second. He hasn't sha'al anything. How do we know? Shlomo's up in Givon. He's got a vacation retreat in Givon. It's a nice town. It's got this nice little big well, you know, with the stairs going all the way down that Avner fought Yoav. It's a nice place to hang out. He's sleeping. Leave him alone. What is God saying? Sha'al no. Ask for something. Is he trying to say, listen, Shlomo, you're missing something? But that's not what seems to go on. Shlomo seems to be fully aware of what he's missing. He's saying, I lev l'shpot ha'am, v'letzeit lavo, etc., etc. So where's the question? So here's where it's important that you catch what happened before in the psukim. Take a look in the pasuk right beforehand. Sorry, pasuk, let's go to pasuk Gimel. Vayev Shlomo Adonai Lalechet Bechukot David Aviv. He loved it in all ways. Rak Babamot Hu Menzabeach Hu Maktir. However, negative thing, he was still bringing korbanot where? Not in the Beit HaMikdash. Why wasn't he bringing the Beit HaMikdash? For obvious reasons. There was no Beit HaMikdash. And then, Rak Am Zabchim Babamot. Not only he wasn't, the entire nation was bringing korbanot Babamot. Ki lo nivne bayit l'shem Hashem ad hayamim ahem. I'm sorry, I skipped backwards. Dalet. Vayelech haMelech Givona. So the Melech goes to Givon. Lizboach Sham Kihua Bamah Hagdola. What was in Givon? That was the Bama Hagdola, which is the classic Bama of Nechoshet that Moshe had built. That's what all the Mepharshim say, and it's absolutely correct. That was the Bama that they brought over when they crossed the Recho. It was placed in Givon, because Givon was the last place there was a Beit HaMikdash. David brought the Aron Kodesh to Har Bayit. True enough, but he left the Aron, the sacrifices in the Aron, he left essentially the working, functioning Beit HaMikdash in Givon. We'll see why that's significant. And let's see what Shlomo does there. Vayelach Melech Givon Lizbalch Sham Kihu Aban Gdola Elef Olot Ya'le Shlomo Ala Mizbeach Oto. 1,000 Olot he did on that day. So the question is, and then it's followed by God appearing to him, which means the question is hidden in the what? Is hidden in what? The sacrifices that Shlomo's doing. But what is that? What is the question? So if Shlomo is bringing 1,000 sacrifices, I don't know if it's one day or a week or whatever, he goes specifically to Givon, he brings 1,000 sacrifices, and that night, after the 1,000 sacrifices, Hashem appears to him and says, okay, now you could ask, obviously, what was Shlomo hoping for when he was bringing 1,000 sacrifices? He's hoping for some kind of revelation from God. So what was it about bringing the 1,000 sacrifices in Givon that was significant? Before we go to that answer, I'd like you to take a look in the third part. That is, this is a dream in Givon. If we read it just as it is, there's no word here of anything except for Chachma and Lev Lishmoa and thank you very much for being the king and maybe a little bit of war. However, if we flip... Yes, of course. Oh, I don't know. It's sometimes with places. It happens with David also. Sometimes it says... it might be significant, but not necessarily. Just because sometimes it refers to the king as Melech. You know what? There may be something significant. Let's see as part of my explanations, we could find an answer. Although I'm not sure you have to necessarily run after Melech versus Shlomo or Shlomo HaMelech or Melech Shlomo. I'm not sure. There may be something to learn from that, but I feel not able to really be conclusive about it. Again, if there's a midrashic interpretation, that's possible. But very often things are spelled differently. Not only that, sometimes with letters that are different, like Yoshua lived in Timnat Cheres, and sometimes in Timnat Serech, which is the opposite words. If there is a significance, I'm not aware of it. Now, if we take a look in Perek Tet, something interesting happens. This is after Shlomo builds the Beit HaMikdash. And Hashem appears to him in a dream. It's right here on the first page. Melachim Aleph Perek Tet, Pasuk Bet. And it says specifically, "Vayera Adonai el Shlomo sheni kashir nira alav b'givon," which he appeared to him as he appeared to him in Givon. Now, I don't think it's saying that God used the technical same channels. I think what it's saying is that the point of the Nevuah was similar to the point of the Nevuah in Givon. But here we know exactly why God shows up. Take a look at the next pasuk. "Vayomer Hashem elav, shamati et tfilatcha, I've heard your prayers. V'yetchinatcha, and your tchina, and your desires, asher itchananta lefanai, hitkadashti et abayit hazeh, I have made this Beit HaMikdash holy, asher banita lasum shmi sham ad olam, to make my name in it forever, v'yu einai v'libi sham kol ha'imim, v'ata im telech lefanai, kasher alach David, and if you go before me, avicha betam levav v'yoshel aso kol asher tivinticha chukai u'mishpatai, tishmor hakimoti kisei mamlat, Now, it's true that the tchina he's talking about is the tchina that we haven't read, that Shlomo got down, and after they build the Beit HaMikdash and it gets turned on, he makes a tchina. But from the fact it says, Kasher anir hala b'givon, one gets the sense that the didactic purpose of the Nevuah is the same as it was in the first place as it is in the second place. And in fact, now flip back to Perek Gimel, and let's see what goes on after the dream. After the dream, you would expect the first thing to happen is that a case is brought. But that is not actually what happens. At least I hope it's not what happens, if I remember the story right. Tet Vav, Vayikat Shlomo, Vihine Chalom. He wakes up and he sees it's a dream. By the way, anybody recognize those words? Vayikat Shlomo, Vihine Chalom. Faro. And the comparisons between Faro and Shlomo are going to haunt him, but that's not the purpose of this year. We will get back to it. We'll see that Shlomo does all kinds of things like Paro. And this is the first indication that Natan Hanavi is telling us that something is not quite right with Shlomo HaMelech, but we're not going to get into it right now. And now take a look what happens. Vayavo where? Then what happens? Vayikat Shlomo b'nei chalom, vayavo where? Take a look. Vayavo Yushalayim, vayamo lefnei Aron b'rit Hashem, vayal, what does he do? Vayal olot, vayal shlamim, vayas v'shtel l'chol avodav. Where should he bring in korbanot? Where's the Mizbeach HaGadol? It's in Givon. And now, after the dream where Hashem has given him a yes, and we're not entirely sure what that yes is, what's the first thing he does after bringing 1,000 sacrifices in Givon in order to get this revelation? He goes immediately to Yerushalayim as a thanks and goes right in front of the Aron, which is Har HaBayit, and starts to bring Korbanot. Just not from the, forget about the dream itself, but if you just saw the bookends of the dream, I go to Givon, I bring the sacrifices to the Beit HaMikdash as it is, that exists there, the Bama there, and then I get a revelation, and then the next thing I do after the revelation is go to Har HaBayit and bring sacrifices, just like I did in Givon, you would think that the tefillah is actually about what? Forgetting about what's actually in tefillah. What's tefillah about? About Beit HaMikdash. So the question is, why does Shlomo need a request for the Beit HaMikdash? Why doesn't Shlomo just move it where he wants? And now we're going to look at some interesting things if you flip the next page.
Isn't he also asking for a continuation of his kingdom that he will have?
This is true, but we're going to see that Shlomo is running into all kinds of problems that are not immediately evident, that have to do with Chokhmah and whatnot, and we're going to see that it all revolves around, again, it's not a simple answer. I'm saying all of a sudden it's about Korbanot, which means that I'm ignoring the entire dream. Does the dream once talk about Korbanot? Not once. So again, how do I satisfy some strange things going on in the dreams, a desire to be a good warrior, a war against who, with the idea that if I look at the dream in a more global sense, it's not even it's talking about the Korbanot. So how do I put it all together? So here's, we're going to have to take a little detour. I'm sorry, do you have a question? Right, and it's right at, and then he builds the Beit HaMikdash, and as soon as he's finished with Beit HaMikdash, Hashem nirah lav kasher nirah lav b'chevron. The Givon. So you're right, it could be that the dream has no thematic connection, and so why does it say kasher nirah lav? Because he dreamed there, he dreamed here, technical. What I'm saying is one gets the feeling kasher nirah lav b'chevron, Givon may have a more thematic thing. However, I'm going to have to prove it, because right now we see one is clearly talking about, one dream is talking about Malucha and the Beit HaMikdash, and the other one is talking about Chachma and Bina. So again, where is the connection? Here we're going to have to take a little detour, and I'm not going to answer the question yet. I'll answer, the question will sort of answer for itself, but we need to understand something about David first. David, in his Tehillim, in Perek, Ayin Bet, he says, Lishlomo. Most people attribute this not to Shlomo, but to David. David is giving a prayer to Shlomo, saying, this is the way you should be. Elohim mishpatecha lemelech tein. A God should give you justice, the ability to do justice. V'tzidkatcha leven melech. And to the child of the king, meaning my son Shlomo, he should give you tzedakah. Yadin amcha b'tzedek. You should wave justice to your people. Sorry, you should give charity to your people. Va'aniyecha, and your poor people, you should do mishpat. Now, what's strange about that? It should be reversed. The aniyecha, the poor people, the ones who need the tzedakah, the amcha, which are apparently your rovam, would need the tzedek. So why does David reverse it? And here's something, what we're going to study something David did wrong, and Shlomo needs to do better. So let's take a look at an interesting parsha of Shmuel Bet Perek Tadzai, Tedvav. Avshalom is about to come power, and look at how he does it. Vayhi me'acharechem, vayaslo Avshalom merkava v'susim, he makes chariots and honor God, chamishim yishratzim v'fanav, v'ishkim Avshalom, and Avshalom gets up, v'amad al yad derech hashar, he stands on the way of the entrance into Yerushalayim, vayhi chol ish asher yelo riv, and anybody who's got a court case, a din Torah, anybody who's got a problem, Lavo el amelech mishpat, and where was he on his way to? This guy was coming to the only place that you go for mishpat, which is the king. That's the job of the king. Vayikra Avshalom elav. Avshalom would grab him and say, Vayomer emi ze irata, from what city are you? Vayomer me'achat shiftei Yisrael avdecha. I'm a stam guy. I'm from one of the shvatim. I'm from Asher. I'm from Dan. Who knows where I'm from? Vayomer elav Avshalom re'ei dvarecha tovim nuchochim. Your words are very important to me. V'shomea ein lecha me'et ha-melech. What is Avshalom claiming about David ha-melech? V'shomea ein lecha me'et ha-melech. Which means what?
You're not
going to get an audience. Exactly right. V'shomea ein lecha me'et ha-melech. Vayomer Avshalom mi yisim eni shofet ba'aretz. But of course, if you place me as the ruler of the land, as the justice maker, as the chief justice of the land, I'm going to make sure that everybody gets some good justice. Whenever somebody came, they listened to his vice, they brought the court case before him. Zeklo, Vinashaklo, it's a touchy feely, I gave him hugs and kisses. But Yasef Shalom Kadavarza the Chol Yisrael, Asher Yavolim Shpat, he took care of everybody who came to David. By Yagnev Avshalom at Lev Anshei Yisrael. He led a grassroots rebellion and literally appealed to the people. But watch which people? Elev Anshei Yisrael, the people of all of Israel, right? Me'achad Shiftei Yisrael. Now, there are two possibilities. Either Avshalom is making an audacious statement when he says, V'shomea Ein Lecha Me'et HaMelech. The king will not hear you. There's two possibilities there, which is what?
It's true
or it's false. If we say it's false, because we know Avshalom is kind of a thug, okay, so he's lying. However, honestly, if somebody came to me and said, somebody's walking by, I hear a conversation, you have a conversation with your wife, and he's like, I just dropped a milk fork into a fleishik pot, but it wasn't exactly hot, it was on the flame, but it hadn't got hot yet, I better go speak to Rabbi Sprung. So I see you, and I say, you know, come here, I can tell you what's going on. Rabbi Sprung, you think he has time for you? He's not going to have anything to do with you. Come here, I'll help you out, I'm a rabbi also. If you knew I was lying, right? If you know Rabbi Sprung's door is always open, and you could go in with Shiloh, would you really stop by me? That is, it's a verifiable fact. This guy's coming, Mikol Shiftei Israel. It's a verifiable fact. Either he stops here and has a justice with Avshalom, or he continues on and he stands in line and he waits to hear from the king. So to say that it's a lie is very difficult simply because it's so verifiable. But if we take the opposite approach, which is intellectually okay, but it's emotionally difficult, what does it mean about David HaMelech? David HaMelech was at this time not doing what? Was not hearing the people. Not just anybody, by the way. Achad mishiftei Yisrael. By the way, keep in mind, this parak is after the Bat Sheva incident. It's after his height. It was when he was already in trouble. Now let's take a look at something else very interesting. V'David avar me'atz me'harosh v'inei tziva nar mefiboshet l'krato. David's on the run away from Avshalom. He's lost so far, temporarily. And Siva, Siva essentially was a servant of Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth is the last descendant. He's the son of Yonatan, the last real descendant of the kings of the Saul line. And what happens is David has said, is there any son left to Yonatan? I promised him, you know, that I'm going to be good to him. He takes him in, and Siva, who was in control of essentially of all this wealth, keep in mind we're talking about a duchy, a kingship. He was in charge of immense lands and holdings. He put Siva was in charge after Shaul fell. David went over to Siva some chapters ago and said, Siva, none of this is yours. You serve Mephibosheth. All of this belongs to Mephibosheth, and you and your children will serve Mephibosheth and his children for all their life. Now, Siva obviously is not that happy about it, but it's the justest thing to do. So Tziva takes advantage of the situation because Mephibosheth, if you remember, is crippled. He can't run. So Tziva leaves him in Yerushalayim. The Tzemen Chaborichu B'shem, he brings all kinds of food. And David said, what is this? Why are you coming? And where's Mephibosheth, Tziva? Where's your servant? Where's the guy that you serve? Where's your master, Mephibosheth? Vayomer HaMelech, this is Pasuk Gimel, Yomer HaMelech, Ayei Ben Adonecha, where's Mephibosheth? Vayomer Tzival HaMelech, Hinei Yoshev Yushalayim, Ki Amar Hayom Yashivu Li Beit Yisrael at Mamachut Avi. Because now I know that Israel will return me to the kingship of the northern kingdom. Now wait a second, who's taking control? Avshalom, who's from Shevet what? From Shevet Yehuda. So why would David accept this lie? And David accepts this lie. It makes sense to David because David feels, if you remember, part of Avshalom's whole thing was that he was bringing in the grassroots from all of Israel. Echad mishiftei Israel. All of Israel would come to him. And for some reason, David feels that he is about to be betrayed by, David thinks that Avshalom is willing to set up a northern kingdom. He's in cahoots with the northern kingdom. If that wasn't true, then Siba's lie wouldn't have held water. Because otherwise Mephibosheth is just as bad under Avshalom as he is with David. Now, if you flip the page, I'm not going to talk about this last little piece here, but let's go to the kingdom will split. And here there's a very interesting chiastic structure. Skip the first box, and when David's running, something interesting happens, and you're going to see where everything falls apart for David, and where I could essentially prove that David had ceased to do stuck in Mishpat, which is a harsh thing to say, but I'll prove it textually. The David Avar, if you remember, David is running away at this point from Avshalom. And who comes out? Who comes out? Siva comes out. Vayomer HaMelech Hinei Lecha Kol Asher L'Mephibosheth. What he does is, when Siva tells him this lie, and David falls for it, he says, I'm taking away all of the kingship lands and giving them to you, Siva, who is some servant. How do you think that's going to make Shevet Binyamin feel? Shevet Binyamin. How do you think that's going to make Shevet Binyamin feel? In fact, I have a question for you. Why do you think David, the first thing David does as a king is what? He says, is there anybody left from the house of Yonatan? Let me bring him in, and he has food here, and I give him back his money, and he's got all of the properties that Shaul had. He doesn't have kingship, but he has all of the other monetary wealth. All of a sudden, David has done what in 1 second? He has ripped out from under Beit Shaul all of this property. Immediately following that act, who comes out of Shevet Binyamin except the leader of Shevet Binyamin at the time? His name was Shimi ben Gera. Uvaha melech David ad ha-Bachurim, he comes to the city called the Bacharim, v'hinei misham ish yosei mishpachat Beit Shaul, u'shmo Shimi ben Gera, and his name is Shimi ben Gera. V'yotso kalel, he's cursing him, ish tamim ata, ish tamid, tsei, ish madim, good, you got what you got. Now you might say, how do I know that the two stories are connected? So first Siva comes out and says, that Mephibosheth he doesn't even like anymore. David rips away all of Shaul's property from Shaul and gives it to Siva. Shimi ben Gera comes out and starts cursing David. So you might say, okay, so that's the order that it happened in. He's leaving Yerushalayim. First Siva gets to him, and then he runs into Shimi ben Gera. Except when David comes back, you'll notice that in the text, the exact opposite thing comes. There's a chiastic structure. You have Siva and Mephibosheth, then you have Shimi ben Gera. David is in exile. When David comes back to exile, you have the opposite structure. First he meets up with Shimi ben Gera, and then he meets up with Siva and Mephibosheth. So let's see what happens in those stories. In Yotet, which is where David returns, I'll skip that. Essentially, Shimi ben Gera says, and I'm sorry, I was wrong, terrible thing that I did. Now look at the Chafei, that's this section right here. When Mephibosheth ben Shaul yarad v'krat ha-melech, he went, Mephibosheth finally gets the ability to get out. He's crippled, he's probably a paraplegic. He manages to get out to the king. V'lo asa raglav, v'lo asa shvamo, v'begadav lo chibes. He did not ever go to the bathroom, essentially, in the toilet, really. He'd been filthy. V'lo asa shvamo, and he hasn't shaved. He's a wild man. V'begadav lo chibes. Now, we'll see why the Torah needs to get into this nitty-gritty detail in a second, why the Navi needs to do this. L'min hayom lechad ha-melech ha-yom asher ba v'shalom. V'yihi kibav Yerushalayim. When he comes to Yerushalayim, l'krat ha-melech, v'yom alo ha-melech, lama lo halachta imi Mephibosheth? Where were you, David says to Mephibosheth. How come? He still believes Tziva, right? How dare you not go with me, is what David is saying. V'yihi, now take a look what happens next. V'yomer adoni ha-melech avdi rimani. My servant Tziva cheated me. He tricked me. Ki amar avdecha ech v'sha li ha-chamor ve'erkav alecha. Tziva told me he was going to go set up a horse for me, and then he rides off on it. And he goes to the king. How is supposed to go? I'm a paraplegic or I'm crippled. He tricked me. He was a spy against me. You, the King David, are like an angel of God. You do whatever you want. I could have been dead if not for your beautiful mercy. And you set up me. You gave me all this food. What more could I possibly ask? You do what you want. I know you're angry at me. I'm telling you the truth that he tricked me. But listen, you could have killed me in the first place anyway. So do whatever you want. What could I possibly say to ask for more tzedaka? Not mishpat, but tzedaka. And now look what David says. Vayomer lamelech, lama tidaber o dvarecha. What is he telling him? Not even. Lama o tidaber avdecha, atav tziva techalku et asadeh. You split it down the middle. You split the fields of Shaul down the middle. So David's not saying that you're lying to me, because if he was sure he's lying to me, he would have done what? Given the property to who? To Tziva. If he thought he was telling the truth, he would have given the property to Mephibosheth. By the fact that he says, shut up. That's what it means. Mama tidaber od essentially is stop talking. Enough of this. And he splits the kingdom down the middle. Now there's a famous medrash, which is one of the most beautiful midrashim in all of Navi. It says when David says to chalku et asida atav et siva chalku et siva et asadeh yotza a bat kol comes out of the heavens and says because of this I split the kingdom. Now, obviously, there was no bat kol. What it means is that single act of David causes an inevitable rift among the kingdom, and you should understand why. Because sometimes there's no room for compromise. I have a question for you. Could David, what is David's job? Again, the only one job of a melech, there was only one job, is lasot tzedakah and mishpat. Could he have determined that Mephibosheth was telling the truth. I ask you, could he have known for sure that Mephibosheth, it's man against man. It's his word. It's he said, right? Except is it? Look back at that first pasuk. Why does the pasuk go out of its way to do what? To describe for us what? The filth. Okay, so David could say maybe he was just trying to trick me. But again, David's job as a Oseh Mishpat Tzedaka is to do what? Investigate. And the first thing out of his mouth is, Lo Tadaberot, I've got problems. And you want to know something? We should sympathize with David. I don't want to say here that David, Chas V'Shalom, David's not a Rasha. David has got problems. There's a rebellion fomenting in the north. His son, he's just killed his son, or he's seen his son killed. He's running away. He doesn't know who loves him and who doesn't love him. My wife is a miserable mess from this point on. He has a lot on his mind, for goodness sakes. He really does. So he says to him, Lama Tadaberot. But you want to know something? David has just made the major mistake. That's the one thing a king can never do. A king can never abdicate his mishpat, regardless of how difficult. Could it have taken him 4 years to figure out? Maybe it would have taken him 4 years of investigation. Let me find some ani. Let me find some adim here. Something good. Investigate. Find out whether he really changed his clothes. Check the toilet. Something. David says, "Lama tadaberot, split the kingdom," which means David does the only thing a king can never do. He abdicates his responsibility for mishpat. And now look at the next words. Now something's going to ring a bell. I hope I have time to teach all this. Vayomer Mephibosheth al Melech. So Mephibosheth hears that he has to lose half of his kingship. And what does he say? Gam et akol yikach, which means don't split the sadeh. Give tziva everything, which is exactly like what, ladies and gents? Exactly like Shlomo and the baby. Shlomo knows full well what his father has done and not done. He's spoken to him. He's learned Tanakh. He studied with Nathan, who took him in his arms. He knows this story. He knows the story full well. And he knows in the end. In fact, David knows the story. Go back to that previous page. That Tehillim that David wrote was probably written very late in his life after Shlomo's already crowned. And he says, Yadin amcha b'tzedek va'aniecha b'mishpat. And the poor people you must do justice to. Why? Because David didn't. And he's telling Shlomo, you must. So now we can finally answer. Mephibosheth didn't lie.
No.
Tziva lied. Why did he do it? He wanted his property back. He was a millionaire, and now he's a pauper. Now he's a servant for Mephibosheth the rest of his life. He was looking for. He was a thug. He was looking for an excuse to take the property back.
Why did Mephibosheth
do
self-testing? Because of his pride.
I'm sorry. What? Because he understood some. Because he understood that compromise is not an option. Compromise sometimes is not an option. Somebody is right here, David HaMelech. By the way, I don't know if he did leave himself desolate. For all we know, the Navi never says. For all we know, David said, I don't care what you say, I'm giving you half the property. Mephibosheth is telling him a conceptual thing. What you did is wrong. There is no such thing as half and half. That is not justice. Give him the whole thing, because that's what you have to do as a king. Now, David didn't, probably. We don't know what David did. But one thing is, the story is exactly parallel to the baby story. Don't split the kingdom. David says, split the kingdom. Mephibosheth says, Chas V'Shalom, you can't, because Mephibosheth understands something about being an ani, even though he was, because he just became poor, right? Just became poor, plus he's a cripple. Aniyecha v'mishpat. David doesn't understand something. What probably happened with David is once the troubles happened with Bathsheba, and if you remember, why did David get into the problems with Bathsheba in the first place? Where was David supposed to be when he was walking around, roaming around the halls of Yerushalayim? He was supposed to be at war. David became a closed-in king. The reason why it says that Avshalom said, because the impression is, you know what? Let's give David his due. You got two poor people. Well, let's go for the full story. Two prostitutes walk up the halls, because that's what we're about to deal with. Two prostitutes, probably. Most people say they are. They walk up, what? We're back to Shlomo. They walk up, but in modern days, 21st century, they walk up the great steps to the Supreme Court justice, and they walk in and they say, excuse me, Mr. I don't know, who's Justice Rehnquist. I got a little problem here. We got a little baby dispute. I'm a prostitute. No money, no claim, no name. What do you think the Supreme Court would do? Do you really think they would get? They really think they would get a? Do you really think that they would get a hearing before the king? It's not even possible in a million years. So what's interesting is not the fact that Shlomo wielded chachma. It was with whom Shlomo wielded chachma with. And now finally, I'm going to prove the point on what. What that pasuk in the dream was all about. There are two very important words that we glossed over that we can't afford to. Back in Parak Gimel, pasuk tet. sorry, start with Pesach Chet, and now look at these words. Va'avdecha betochamcha, your servant, me, Shlomo, is amongst your nation, asher bacharta, which you chose, Amrav, a massive nation, asher lo yimanev, lo yisaper meiro, who is so great that it's impossible to even do a census on them. V'natata l'avdecha leiv shmo l'shpot, I want to hear justice at amcha, l'havim ben tov ura, ki mi yuchal l'shpot et amcha hakaved hazeh, which means what? Not who could do justice to your people, period, amcha, but amcha hakaved hazeh. He's not talking about quantitative capabilities of justice. What is he talking about? I messed that up. He's not talking about qualitative. We thought the chachma that he's talking about is qualitative. I need to be a super smart. I'm smart. I need to be super smart. You don't need to be super, super smart. If you need a miracle, it's not l'shpot ha'am. It's l'shpot ha'am ha'kaved hazeh. You see in both those psukim, it's not the nation which is emphasized. It's the count of the nation is emphasized. How is it possible? And by the way, I have no idea. Don't ask me. I heard the Rav say once, he said, don't think that it's a backwards government that has prostitutes walking up the doors and getting a hearing. That's an enlightened government. How is it possible? I mean, all of us are practical. We all know that there are millions and billions of millions and hundreds of millions of cases. How is it possible for Judge Rehnquist and the rest of those people to hear every case? I don't know. We're not exactly privileged to the miracle, although I will give you a few hints. Nonetheless, it's clear that that's what David is asking for. Shlomo asking you. So again, what does that have to do? What does, essentially what he wants to do, you do mishpat, not only to do justice to the people, but also to control the people. The people are coming, I got a big problem. If you don't help me with this problem, I'm going to go to Avshalom or somebody else. If you don't solve my problems, it's mishpat is not only an issue of justice, it's also an issue of prevention and restitution. It's a way to, honestly, be melech. It's a way to be melech. Because the people need it. If the people don't get it, they're not controlled. So now what does that have to do with the Beit HaMikdash? And here's the next page. And we'll flip back and forth a little bit. But take a look at, this is the picture of Givon. Look at where Givon is versus Yushalayim. Yushalayim, by the way, is not clear on this map. It's a city called Yavus. And as I mentioned in other Shirim, Yushalayim sat directly on the border between Shevet Binyamin, which is here, and Shevet Yushalayim. It was like, there is a Yushalayim. Yushalayim is where it is, in between Yehuda and Binyamin, for Lahavdil Elif Alafim Pamim, for the same reason that they moved Washington, D.C., where it was. Washington, D.C. was moved down towards the south because it needed to be close to the Mason-Dixon line. That's purely political. Now, Yerushalayim was not just for political reasons. However, it is lower in mountains. There are two crossroads that run through it. And again, you could say, okay, then Yerushalayim is Yerushalayim only for geographical reasons. Obviously, with God and with Eretz Yisrael, the geopolitical and the political and the geographical and the spiritual all merge into one. Yerushalayim is where it is because God chose for Yerushalayim to be what it is. But Yerushalayim was a border state between Binyamin that used to be the king, that had their kingship pulled away from them, and between Yehuda, who's taken over of the kingship. But now, what? But where was the Beit HaMikdash? The de facto Beit HaMikdash was in Givon. Do you see where Givon is? Whose Shevet was it? It was in Binyamin. So while Shlomo had wrested away territory, while David himself had felt powerful enough to bring the Aron HaKodesh to Yerushalayim, he didn't dare to move the center of essentially what was the working Beit HaMikdash. You know, like Napoleon said, if I were the Jewish king, I would build the Beit HaMikdash is what I would do right now because that would unify the people. The same thing here. You do not move the Beit HaMikdash because that's where people serve God. Whenever they wanted to bring the people together, they would do a big Korban Pesach, a Korban with Shmuel in the Mitzvah. It was always centered around Korbanot. I got some super spiritual Aron. Who cares? A little box that nobody can see except the Kohen Gadol once a year. Who cares? But the Mizbeach is something people could feel and touch, and religion is the center of politics. And now Shlomo is daring to do what? He's daring to essentially put the final coffin into the concept that Binyamin's still running the show. So he says to him, he goes up to Givon, and he says, and he sacrifices 1,000 sacrifices in a desire to, of course, do what? To bring the Mizbeach back to Yerushalayim. He needs, well, control of the people. He needs to be a person who can wield mishpat. He needs to be able to control the masses. Not necessarily in a negative sense, because without that control, he wields no power to build the Beit HaMikdash as himself. Plus, he understands that after David, now again, I hate to flip back, but let's flip back a page. If we flip back a page, you'll notice at the top something very interesting. This is one of these cases where the Navi looks like it's repeating itself, and you wonder why the Navi didn't have better things to do. Except here's something very interesting. At the top box, this is when David is at the height of his powers, in the Perek Tet. It's before the Bat Sheva incident. Vayimloch David al kol Yisrael, vayihi David oset staka in mishpat l'chol amo. Right? He's the classic king. Oset mishpat l'chol amo. The Yoav, and now it mentions his Sarim. Yoav ben Suriah, Yehoshaphat, Mazkir, Tzadok is the Kohen, Suriah is the Sofer, Benayahu is the head of the secret service, and Vnei David ki Hanim Hayu. Now, after everything goes bad, and he comes back, and there's rebellion, Sheva ben Bichri is not happy about property being taken away from Mephibosheth. So he says, Ma Yeshli and Ben David, let's out of here. All of Sheva ben Yamin, all of north of Israel, out of there. Now, David was able to put down the rebellion. After David pulls down the rebellion of the north, and essentially it's the last thing he does in Sefer Shmuel Bet, look at what it says. Vayoav al Atzava, Uvnayahu ben Yodah al Kreti, Adoram al Amas, Vyoshaphat ben Achur Amazkir, Ushaya Sofer, Vitzadak Yvatar Kohanim. Who's the only new guy? The only new guy. See, it looks like a repetition, but there's one very significant person there. Do you see who it is? The Adoram al-Hamas. What did David anoint?
Taxes.
For whom, do you think?
Everybody but
Judah. Probably. And how do we know that for sure? In the end of Shlomo's life, when I don't want to jump out, we probably won't get there anyway in the next 5 weeks, but after Rehoboam and Yeravam split the kingdom, and Rehoboam says, I'm telling you that I'm going to be the king. He sends up Adoniram, if you remember. That's the same guy. Adoniram goes up to tax collect in the north, and they stone Adoniram. Yeravam and his fellow stone Adoniram to death, which means the only reason David has to appoint Adoniram in the north to do tax collection is because he has to. And the only reason he's have to is if he's losing a full control. When things were good, there was no Adoniram. There was no tax collector. And tax wasn't just money. It was people, service to the king. But when things aren't so good, when David does not have full control, it is necessary to establish a tax collector. What Shlomo needs more than anything else is the ability to control his people. And only if he controls his people can he finish David's job. David didn't dare to move the Mizbeach out of. Hashem says, you're not the one who's going to be able to build it for many reasons. He was a man of blood. His son had to move it. But among other reasons, he couldn't have dreamed of it. David never would have been able to pull it off because Binyamin and the northern tribes would have skedaddled. Shlomo, however, is asking for the ability to control the people, and he does so with this mishpat. Now, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do the whole case of the women, but let's see how much we can get through. I'm going to sum up a little bit. We're not going to be able to read inside. But the main problem with the women is like this. I'm going to show you the pasuk, which makes no sense. You know, let me repeat this just quickly. The women, two women come over. One woman has a baby. And the third day, after 3 days, the other woman has the baby. Her baby dies after it's born. The second woman, she steals the first baby's wife. The first baby says, no, that's my baby. They both go to Shlomo. Shlomo says, I'm going to cut the baby in half. And the woman said, and of course, the famous thing, another woman says, no, don't cut the baby. And that's the way Shlomo knows who the mother is. A nice, happy story. That's not the way it reads at all. Not the way it reads at all. Let's take a look at the psukim. The psukim are prima facie, make no sense whatsoever. Let's take a look and see what the woman actually says, and we'll see that the whole thing is bizarre. It is, I'll tell you in a second, I have to find it myself. Chaf Dalet. Vayomer Amelech, Chuli Cherev, get me a sword. Vayaviu Acherev, Vnei Amelech. They bring the sword before the king. Chaf Dalet. Vayomer Amelech, Gizru et Ayel et Achai L'Shnaim. Cut him in two. Now, by the way, do you think he's bluffing or not bluffing? What? Not bluffing. See, and if he's not bluffing, what is he, insane? It's kind of a thing. Does everybody agree with Saba? Does he all think that he's not bluffing? Is he going to go through with it? If the woman shut their mouth, do you think Shlomo would go through and kill the baby, cut him in two? Would you think he would?
No.
Most people, I have to say, would say he's bluffing. Saba's got something else going on, and I want you to know, I think Saba's right, but let's see if we can prove the case. Because something else is going on weird here. Vatomer ha'isha et benah ha'chai. The woman who was the first woman who gave birth 3 days earlier, who really is the woman who has the live baby, ki nichmeru rachamecha al bana, please have mercy on my kid. Vatomer bi adoni tnuli et ayaluda chai v'hameit al tmidu. Just give, please, give the woman the live baby. Give that woman the baby. Just don't kill him, please. V'ha'al tmidu, don't kill him. V'zotomeret. And then the other one said, gamli v'gamlach lo ye gazor. You won't have it, I won't have it, split it in half. What's wrong with that? What's wrong, mentally wrong, with the second woman?
She had already
She's admitting that it's not hers.
Right. The other woman had already said, give the woman the baby. So there are two things wrong. First of all, she'd have to be, as you said, she'd have to essentially, she's admitting the baby's not hers by the fact that the first woman is showing mercy. But there's something even weirder going on.
What?
Well, I'll say again.
She already got it. In other words, the other woman gave it up.
And more than that, if she, why? I have a question for you. Why would she have stolen it in the first place?
She wanted
the baby, and all of a sudden she gets the baby. She's got, forget about whether she's going to look like the good woman. So maybe, you know what? She could say, you're right, it's mine. So she still looks kind of insensitive, right? Nonetheless, she's got what we think prima facie is her goal. They're only, why would you steal a baby? Oh, she's depressed or whatever, okay, but she's willing to kill the baby? What kind of woman is this? What kind of woman is this? But the whole thing, it doesn't make sense anyway, because she's heard what the other woman has said. The other woman has specifically said, give the woman the baby. You would have to be insane afterwards to say, you know, cut the baby in half. Don't care. I mean, either you admit that you're a psychopath, and then you're also admitting that you never wanted the baby in the first place. But then we're left another question. If she didn't want the baby in the first place, what was she doing stealing the baby? What was the purpose? What? Oh, so if she wanted to hurt the other woman, she succeeded. The other woman said, give her the baby. I've succeeded. I got the baby. Oh, she hurt him more by killing him? That's not a good answer, because she could have killed the baby in the middle of the night, right? My baby's just died. I want to hurt that woman. I'll go stab the baby. Nobody will know. There are no Eidim around. Now, by the way, keep in mind the halacha. If two people walk in and nobody with a talit, and nobody is grabbing the talit, and I say it's mine, and the other person says, I'm sorry, if I'm holding a talit in my hands, I believe this is the halacha, though please ask a more serious rabbi than me, but that's where I was wrong. If I'm holding a talit in my hand, we both don't have it, and the other person says, no, that's my talit, what's the halacha? Amotzi mechavero alav haraya. So by pure halachic reasons, if Shlomo's supposed to do what he's supposed to do halachically, and we believe that's true, who should get the baby? The woman who stole it. What's the mishpat for? What is he doing threatening the baby with death? Now, you could say he was just bluffing. But again, if he was just bluffing, then why? I'm not so sure he was just bluffing. Chazal say, by the way, he wasn't just bluffing. I'll hopefully get to that medrash soon. But also, if he's just bluffing, there should be a sensitivity for that. The second woman shouldn't say, okay, kill the baby. He should call off his bluff. Right? At that point, I'm going to kill the baby. Why can't he? Why doesn't it seem logical that he should be bluffing? As soon as woman number one, who is the real mother, says, give the baby to the other child, give the baby to the other mother, the bluff's over. Shlomo's not going to continue with the bluff. However, the bluff is clearly on, because if the bluff wasn't, if Shlomo didn't put away his sword, the second woman had no reason whatsoever to say, Shneim Gzoro, kill them both, if he had already put away his sword, which gives an impression that he's not bluffing at all. So we got all kinds of questions. So, I'll answer it in a simple way. If you turn the page, you'll see a family setup. There's a medrash that says all kinds of things about these women. And one Tana says one thing, says Yevamot Haim. They were Yevamot. So nobody explains what that means, but the Meiri, who was a Rishon, I believe it was a Rishon, comments on Gemara Yevamot, says this was the setup. And this is how it works. I got an old guy and a young guy, their father and son. Okay? The son is married to a younger woman on the right-hand side, probably a younger woman. I'm guessing that. I don't know that for sure. It doesn't make a difference. They could be the same age. The father is married to another woman. If the woman on the right's baby, which is the daughter, which is the one who was married to the son, her baby is lost and she has no other children, which she doesn't, she essentially de facto becomes a what? What happens to a woman And what happens, what I haven't told you the story, is that both of the guys croak. Not only do the babies croak, her baby croaks, but the fathers croak as well. Both fathers croak as well, the father and the son. So if her husband, the guy over here, croaks, and she has no children, then guess what she becomes? A Yevama. But the question is, a Yevama to who? Where's the brother? So if you look closely, you'll see where the brother is. Do you see where the brother is? The brother is the baby of her husband's father's wife. Do you see how that works? And now, guess what? He's a baby 3 days old. She can't do chalitza for 13 years, and she can't do kiddushin for 9 years. She is stuck, stuck, stuck. So she's got two choices. She's not a mean girl. If her baby dies, if you switch it, the other woman is okay, because the other woman's husband died, but the husband has no brothers. He has a son, but he has no brothers. She's not stuck. She'd go marry somebody else. But if it's my baby who dies and your baby's alive, that baby is my husband, is my dead husband's brother. I'm now stuck for 9 or 13 years. She's got two choices at this point. one choice, which is the better moral choice, if you could call it moral, is to steal the baby. If I steal the baby and I say it's mine, I'm not a Yavama anymore because I've got a baby. You're not a Yavama. You got no problems. Go marry somebody else. You're a nice young girl, whatever it is. You're a nice girl. You know, go marry somebody else. You're not stuck to this Yibum thing, to this three-day-old baby. However, once it doesn't work out that way, then the death of the baby is perfectly satisfactory with her. That's how it works out. Now, there's only one little, it's nice. So where's a nice Taish by the Miri. Now, there's only one problem. What? It's nice. The Meiri on Yavama. Now, there's actually a technical problem with the Meiri. It's 10 o'clock. We started 5 minutes late. Do you mind if I just go 5 minutes and hopefully I'll be able to finish up? There's a problem with the dead baby theory. So with the mystery of the dead baby, there's one problem, which is actually if a woman has a child and the child is born after the baby comes out and the child is born alive and then the child dies, even within a single day, a woman is not a Yavama midioraita. The Rabbanon, you have to wait 30 days because the child may have been born after 8 months. So you have to wait 30 days for the child to be a true bar kayama, a true born baby. So it's a halacha de Rabbanon that if you lose your baby, if somebody loses their child the day that the baby was born, it's a de Rabbanon law. They can't do Yibum because it's only de Rabbanon. So the Rabbanon forced her to do what? Them to do what? Chalitza. Now the problem is he can't do chalitza. Right? The baby can't do big chalitza. He's not old enough. He's not a bar dot. He has to be 13 to do chalitza. He can marry at 9, but he can't do chalitza until 13. Chalitza and yibum. Yibum can be done at 9. Chalitza can't be done. Yibum can be done at 9. Chalitza must be 13 because you have to be a bar mitzvah in order to do yibum as opposed to marriage. There's one problem. It's a din d'rabbanan. So I don't think Shlomo was worried about a din d'rabbanan. Right? Why would Shlomo be worried about a din d'rabbanan? So you could say the d'rabbanan was from the Anshei Knesset Gola at Shlomo's time. You could say that, but there's a problem. Chazal say something else entirely. Chazal say, there's a medrash that says, I'll read it to you if possible. Well, if I read it to you, it's going to take too long. A medrash, somebody Bar Ilai, I can't remember what it was, says, if I was there when Shlomo was going to kill the baby, I would have put a rope around his neck and choked him to death before he killed the baby. And that's why in Kohelet it says, Oy la'am she'esh la melech nar. Oy vei, to the king who doesn't, it was a baby, who doesn't know how to do justice. Which means, according to this Chazal, very critical of Shlomo. What they're saying is not only was he going to go through with it, which I think we pretty much proved, but he was going to do the wrong thing. Unfortunately, the Medrash never resolves itself. What does he say? Yatza Batkol. A Batkol came out and said, she's the mother. So when the Pasuk says, she's the mother, we thought it was Shlomo talking. It wasn't. It was God talking. It's not a great answer. But here's something I want you to think about, what Shlomo's doing. Anybody ever seen a newborn baby, moments after the baby is taken out and put into the warmer?
Yes.
And then think about a three-day-old baby. What do they look like? They look different. Now, Shlomo, I don't know if you know Glenn Goldberg. He davens in Or Torah. And I've heard him talk about this many times. And he's the assistant district attorney of Essex. And I've heard him say to people, not to me, because I never argue with the assistant district attorney of any town. I've heard him say, I don't understand the whole Edim thing. Are you trying to tell me that if you have one aid or no Edim, according to religious law, you go scot-free? I could commit a murder, according to the Torah. I may not be a great guy. I may get my comments from guy. But one aide could go, and I could have a smoking gun, right? A smoking gun. And I could have one aide who witnesses me kill somebody, and I go scot-free. Why? Because there are no two aidim. So Glenn is understandably kind of upset by this. Glenn makes his money on what? Forensic evidence? His whole life is based on proof and forensic evidence. Substantial evidence isn't a joke. It's for real. It's for real. If there's reasonable doubt, okay, so they'll throw out the case. But Glenn works very hard to make sure he's got the jury who won't believe that it's a reasonable doubt. And you want to know something? Shlomo was upset by it also. I'll tell you what Shlomo's chachma is. A very interesting thing happens. There is a break in the parsha. It doesn't really show up. If you look back again at your page, you'll notice that the case is divided into two, even though it doesn't seem it should be. Here's the case where the women come before the king in Perek Gimel, and then there's a break, and then it says, "Vayomar Melech Chuli Cherub." Do you see this break here? One gets the sensation of a cessation in time. So if you were David in the case of Mephibosheth, again, let's go back to David. What should you have done if a stinky, smelly guy comes to you and says, my guy cheated me? Can't you see? I got crud all over me. David, instead of saying, shut up, should have said what?
Let me think about it.
Or investigate or do something. Shlomo, in my opinion, by the way, the only way to resolve the Medrash, because the Medrash said he was doing the wrong thing when he said, I'm going to kill the baby. However, honestly, Shlomo could only not have, if we want to say Shlomo was a good guy, there's no way he would have been willing to kill an innocent baby. He must have known how it was going to play out. We can't say he wasn't going to go through with it because it doesn't make sense. We can't say he was definitely going to go through it without knowing who was right because then he's a madman. He's a madman. The only possibility is he had reasonable idea, a circumstantial evidence to know which one was the mother and which one was not the mother. And honestly, the only way for him to know that is using not Adim, because Adim, if it was only up to Adim, he would have given the baby to the first mother and the Mishpat. He would have done what he would have done. Oh, he would have done Mishpat. Where's the Tzedakah, maybe? But he certainly would have been in his legal rights. He wouldn't have made any friends. He wouldn't have been able to rule his kingdom maybe so well, but he certainly would have been in his legal right. I believe that Shlomo has invented for the first time, and next year what we're going to introduce is Shlomo's political machinations. We're going to see how Shlomo breaks apart the 12 tribes and reorganizes them and appoints very interesting people over those 12 tribes. He essentially introduces for the first time a federalist state as opposed to a tribal state. We're going to see that next time. He does all kinds of things to rearrange politics, and I believe what his chachma was, what he knows that no other people know, is go take a look at the baby. Now the baby's probably buried, so what that means, I believe, is Shlomo exhumed the baby. I have no proof. I'm making this stuff up. I am. But it feels right to me. The only way for Shlomo not to have been insane and yet not to be bluffing is if he knew. And the only way for him to know is to do what his father didn't, which is go take a look. All he'd have to do is examine the baby, talk to the... All he'd have to do, let's say the Meiri is right, and the Meiri may be right. Let's go back to the Meiri's theory. The Meiri's theory is provable if you do what? Go check. Shlomo's a smart guy. If Shlomo sees this picture, it takes a while to figure it out. It took me a while to understand the Meiri also. Shlomo looks at this picture, he's like, he doesn't have to sit for half an hour listening to my shiur, believe me. Shlomo sees the picture, he's like, uh-huh, I see the problem. I believe that Shlomo introduced the concept of what Glenn would be very happy to hear, of circumstantial evidence, of theory, of applying laws, of pressure. Oh, by the way, the simplest answer, how is it possible? Woman number one said, Chas v'shalom, have mercy on the baby, how can you possibly kill the baby? We said woman number two in almost any circumstance had to be insane to say kill the baby unless she wasn't where?
Wasn't there when woman number one?
Which means they were where? The two women are in what? Separate rooms, which sounds just like what? Classic case of evidence in modern times. Again, this is, I'm dreaming this up. I'm only getting hints from places. However, Shlomo's chachma, what did Shlomo need? Shlomo needed to be able to control the masses. And the best way to control the masses is to do justice with the masses. Oh, by the way, the war thing. Of course he didn't want to go with war. The only person to go to war with is if we would have brought down the Beit HaMikdash. He's not saying I don't know how to go to war. He says I don't want to go to war. And the only way I can afford not to go to war against northern kings, like my father was constantly against them with this Adoniram guy, is if I manage to convince the people that I'm the man. If I establish a rule of politics and justice which is uncrackable. And that's what he demonstrates with the Zona. And if you notice, just for the last Pasuk, and I didn't do a really important part about it, but okay, maybe next time. If you notice, the last Pasuk in Perek Gimel is actually a scary Pasuk. Vayhi, Pasuk Chavchet. Vayishmu kol Yisrael et ha-mishpat asher shafat ha-melech. They heard what he had done, the justice he had done. Vayiru'u mipnei ha-melech, and they were afraid of him. Just like you're afraid of the assistant district attorney. You're not likely to commit a crime. See, it used to be I could commit a crime without Aiden. Now it's not so pushant. It used to be I able to use to push and pull. Now I've got a king who's willing to go to the mat to find out what's right or wrong. By Yeruim Bnei Amalek, he raw at Chochmat Elohim b'kirbo lasot mishpat. He knew how to do justice. By Yehi Melech Shlomo Melech HaKol Yisrael. And because of that, he was the kingdom of all of Israel, managed to tie together the kingdoms, and only then, actually, not then is he yet able to build a Beit HaMikdash. First, he's got to reorganize politics as we know it as well. First, he organizes the legal system. Next week, he'll organize politics as we know it. That's the share.